Cats love snow. That's the things you're going to learn in the backpack show. Hey, we've got a show today, Carrie. I think we have a show. I don't know. Rumors is your show.
We do, in fact. We have three guests today. I'm very excited about this. So Mateo Ascarapor is the novelist behind the darkly comic novel Black Buck. You'll learn some sales lessons. You'll be entertained. And there's a lot there about how we treat people of color in the workplace, sometimes without even realizing it. And by we, I mean people like me that are white as sour cream. So it's very interesting. And as marketers, there's lots and lots of sales lessons wrapped up in it. And there are little elements of satire, like one character in particular, I think people in the marketing space.
Let's do the whole interview right here in the preview.
Will you shut up? This, I'm telling you what's interesting about the book that I found interesting because I read it, which you didn't.
Did not.
All right. Do you want to talk about who else we have?
Sure. We have Dominique Townsend. She's going to help us with some incredible stuff about figuring out the future of work.
The founder of We Optimize Work.
We Optimize Work because she's helping working moms and people who get back to work figure out what they want to be when they grow up. Listen, a lot of ladies chose to stay home during this time, or were told they should stay home during this time. So she's here to support those people and also all the other women who are going to make the world better.
And the one who continue working while homeschooling their kids and all that other stuff and don't get the support they need. And we'll talk with Gabe Anderson, known as Gabe the Bass Player, who's a bass player and live event producer. He has a really cool playlist called Home Love on Spotify and Apple. If you don't follow that, you should. And a daily music blog. So I think that's everyone.
Bass! How low could you go? See, we could go right into some good bass.
Okay.
Be good stuff. Look, there's a chit-chat festival going on backstage. So it's a day. Hey, my parents are here. They don't have a foot of snow.
They're here for insights about success from unusual places. And by gum, they're going to get it.
By gum.
Hi, everyone. Tim Kitzer from NBA Jam and NFL Blitz. Welcoming you to The Backpack Show. Your hosts, Chris Brogan, Kerry Gorgone, Boom Shakalaka.
Backpack Show.
Woo! Have we got it today?
I think you have some sponsors to thank before we begin.
What? Are you going to help me do my job and make it once that I actually get sponsors at the beginning?
I mean, I'm going to try. I don't know.
Authors. What if you wrote an author? What if you wrote an author? You know, I'm never going to get hired by the company now. What if you wrote a book and you need to promote the book and maybe you don't have a really cool website for it? Maybe you're an author on the show who could use a book publishing promotion website.
He actually has a really good website.
I know he does. It was good. You could get one like this called PubSite, pub-site.com. You can make something for yourself for free the very first day and look at it for 13 and a half days before you even have to pay for it. 14-day free trial. First thing right out of the gate. Make it and just sit and look at it and marvel and go, look at my new website.
It's stupid easy to use. Yeah. Pub-site.com.
Get
it. Give it a try.
14-day free trial, $19.99 a month after that. $4.99 if you want somebody else to make the site for you. That's cheap.
Obscenely cheap.
Yeah. Okay.
But it comes out really nice.
Hey, you want to make a show like this? You probably do better than me. cbrogan.me/StreamYard lets you make a show almost like this one.
Bring your own authors and founders and bass players.
Do, 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 do. I'm doing the Seinfeld bass in my head. You cannot believe it, but we're sponsored by John Civil Sausage. In fact, I just got my little 1099 in the mail that I have to go tell the government that John Civil Sausage gave me $2,000 so I could give it to all of you. So we bought sausage for nuns. We bought sausage for all kinds of weirdos like Steve Garfield and his wife, Carol. Sausages all around, baby. John Simville, get some sausages.
I don't know what it says about me that my first thought was, I'm going to send a bunch of sausage to those nuns that we had on the show.
I know. That was your very first thought out of the gate.
Because, well, so, all right. So they had talked about how they had to cook with donated food and how hard it is to make things with like cilantro pesto. And I'm like, well, that sucks a lot. So when we had the chance to send some delicious sausage, I was like, they need it. So anyhow.
We have Mish and Michelle here in the audience today. We have everybody here. So.
So excited. Coach Woodard. Everyone's so excited Misha's back.
We're going to grab author Mateo Ascarapor.
Dave loves his website. He says, bow down to the beauty of my website.
What's that URL again, Dave? We'll put it up. We'll look at your site while we're talking.
He didn't give it to us.
I know. I'm saying get it. Oh. So I said, let's grab our man Mateo. We'll ask him some questions.
All right, then.
Listen, Black Buck.
He wrote Black a novel. Buck. What is wrong with you?
Yeah, it's not me.
That's just a novel, I know.
You know, there are a lot of
It's like a yellow card. Where's the yellow card that I heard about?
You are right.
I'm catching up on those yellow cards.
You're so right.
Yellow card Brogan. You know, what else is new?
All right. Well, the novel's called Black Book.
That's yes. right.
Yes. There are, in fairness, a lot of parallels, right, to your own life. Like, you did work in a startup as, mm-hmm. were you the only person of color or the only Black person there?
No, I was neither. So there are a couple of parallels. I worked at a startup and I worked in sales for sure. It's not like we had many Black and brown folk at the startup that I worked at, but there were more than a few.
And you made it to director of sales really quickly.
Yeah, I was director of sales development. So, you know, Chris probably knows, having worked with, digital and marketing organizations, I was managing around 30 people who were making the cold calls and also inbound calls to people that have raised their hands and expressed interest. So I was managing 30 of those when I was 24.
Oof.
Yeah.
I did not want to manage anybody else when I was 24. I don't really want to now. I've had to at times under protest, but I did not like it.
Mm.
So what made you choose to write about something that so it semi-closely parallels some of your experiences? So why go there as opposed to writing something so completely different from your own experience?
Yeah, well, it was out of necessity. I had already written two manuscripts and they hadn't gone anywhere. They did not get me an agent. They did not get me a book deal. And I was at, you know, what I describe as creative rock bottom. So I was like, okay, what am I doing? Who did I think I was that I could transition from being this sales guy, this startup guy, to then being someone that would write and then eventually have a book published and then come on, you know, the Chris Brogan show or something like this. So it was in that place that I told myself, why have I been avoiding certain things that are close to my life? And I believe that the reason was because I couldn't articulate those things to myself or to other people on the page yet. But around November 2018, I had the idea for a book that's a little bit different than Black Buck. And I told myself, it'd be great to get an agent, it'd be great to get a book deal, but I need to write a book for myself in my way and for the people I want to serve.
One thing I like about the story was that you didn't set it out to be a satire. People just kept telling you it was a satire. And I think it's, as they've said way too many times, and so that's why I'm quoting it, darkly comic.
Sure.
It's that, you know, you just have to laugh or you'll cry kind of storyline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But
if you didn't set out to make it that way, are you just naturally a satirical and entertaining person of that style?
That's really the answer, Chris, because there are satirical elements for sure. There are some absurd elements, but there are also elements of it being a comedy, a drama, a romance, and then by the end, a thriller. But what I tell folks is it's fine if people want to label it a satire, even though that wasn't my initial intention. I wrote it very sincerely and very earnestly, but that is also the way that my mind works. Where one second, you know, I will be upset about things going on. And then 30 seconds or a minute or an hour later, I'm poking fun at it. Because as you said, Chris, you know, if you don't laugh, then you'll cry or you'll break something.
So I'm about an hour from finishing the audiobook, which is fantastic. And I don't want to spoil things for anybody. So I'm going to let you set up the novel, if you would, just for people who haven't read it and should.
Sure. Yeah. So Black Buck is about a young man named Darren. He's living in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. He has his mother, his girlfriend, his best friend, his neighborhood, and his neighborhood has him. He's also working at a Starbucks in Midtown Manhattan. And one day, this suave, good-looking white guy named Rhett Daniels comes in. He's the CEO of a startup called Someone, S-U-M-W-N. And he says, "Give me my regular." But for some reason, Darren says no, and he sells him on another drink. Rhett, impressed, invites Darren all the way up to the 36th floor, and he extends an offer to join his elite sales team. Darren reluctantly agrees, and he soon finds out he is not the only Black salesman there. He's the only Black person. So he goes through hell and back in order to make it to the top. Once he's there, power, status, money, all those good things, he says, "You know what? I don't like being the token Black guy." So he hatches a plan to help other people of color infiltrate America's tech startup sales teams, redefining what it means to be a minority in the workplace.
Wow. See, that's a lot better than I would have done. There's a lot of detail in the book that it's a lot of the characters are all really fully fleshed out. Mm. So for Thank me, you. The details that stand out are not just the kind of bare bones plot. You get way even the, like the people that Darren works with at Starbucks are very important to the plot. Yeah. You know, the way he interacts with them are very important to the plot. It all feels very personal and up close.
Hmm.
So that must have taken time to develop. I'm sorry, Chris, go ahead.
No, I was going to overlay and yes and that a little bit and just say that there were, you know, and it's not a, a lot of people get a chance to be on the stage in this book. There's a lot of chance for, you know, to us to see some of the performers. That's hard, I think, as a writer. You know, you can write a character well. It's hard to decide you're going to try to bring everybody up so that you know, someone someday is going to say, I want to be that one.
Yeah.
You know, when this isn't a movie or something. Did you think about that ever while you're writing it? Is like, how's this going to work as a movie?
No, I didn't. I wrote it, you know, in a way that'd be visually appealing. And what you're talking about is bringing different characters onto the stage. These characters were and are real people to me, right? It's not like I talk to them. I'm not walking down the street saying, hey, Buck, you know, but I did think about them to the point where they became so real. So I wanted to render them on the page authentically. And say things that this type of person would say, or do things that this type of person would do, or have them act out of character, as we often do, or maybe not often, but once in a while. So in terms of being intentional about bringing those types of folks to the page, that was something that I definitely wanted to do.
One of the things that's really central to the book and its plot is the idea of each one teach one.
Yep.
If you want to talk about that, does that play a role in your own life as well?
Most definitely. Yeah. I find that success really isn't, you know, it doesn't mean all that much if you can't help other people attain it. That's just embedded in my DNA. And I mean, in some ways it's self-interested, because when I help people, I feel good, you know, and I feel better. So it's like a win-win. But especially where I am at this stage, right? The book hit the New York Times bestseller list. We were on the Today Show, like all of these great things are going on. It's important for me to take time, maybe not every day, but at least every week, to help a handful of people if possible.
I'm just bringing up your website. I want people to see you. I want people to see your incredible author picture that you have to have.
And yeah, so those are two. I got two websites. There's this one, which is my more personal writer one. Then I got buyblackbuck.com, which I set up just centered around the book. And my publisher, HMH, they have done an incredible job getting the book out there. But at the same time, I wanted to have my own flavor and my own level of control over the narrative of the book and its promotion. So buyblackbuck.com is another.
Let's bring it up. Mm.
Oh, yeah, there it is.
There it is.
A crackling satirical debut novel. You're not a salesperson. You're a marketer.
I didn't write this.
Okay. Okay.
So satire would make it seem as though it was implausible, but it's not. It's a times extreme, but I wouldn't say it's implausible, which is scary, frankly, at times.
Yeah. Well, what I say is that absurdity is in the eye of the beholder, because there are some people who have written to me and said, you know, some of this stuff is absurd. And I'll say, you know, like what? And there are absurd things. There's a pig in the office, right? You that's poking fun at the fact that startups have dogs and all these different animals, right? I've actually never seen a pig or a goat. So that is absurd. But what people bring up is they say how malicious some people can be in the workplace to those who are the resident other, not just due to race, but maybe sexual orientation, gender expression, religion. And I say, you know, what's absurd is picturing that, you know, now we're going to get a little political, is that
let's do it.
Person who was on TV when I was a kid, you know, would become president of the United States. Or what's absurd is that men and women, but mostly men and mostly white men, not all, but mostly white men, would be storming the Capitol and then screaming and shooting videos like they just watched Braveheart. That's absurd, but it happened. So the fine line is being blurred between reality and what we can imagine every day.
That is a great segue into another question, which is, so you got this one done. You're not a one and done guy. You got a lot more to do. What's on the horizon, and how much of it did you have to throw in the garbage can after what 2020 served up?
Okay. So I haven't thrown out anything, right? I'm not writing for the time exactly. I'm just writing what I want. And with Black Buck, people say, wow, this has just coincided with such a moment. But what I say is that there have been a series of moments that has gotten us to this one, and I was writing to those. So it is nice how it lined up, but yeah, I'm working on another book. Not so much right now because I'm so focused on promo for Black Buck. We are working on bringing it to the screen in some way or another that I can't fully discuss yet. But most importantly, I'm just looking to connect with readers and find folks like yourself.
I'm into it.
I was just thinking that writing a book like this could either start a lot of really important and good conversations, or prevent you from having conversations maybe you're getting a little tired of having, like with well-meaning white people, even like myself, about what it's like to be the resident other in the office. Do you think we should like gift this to people, or
Of course he wants us to give this to people.
Yeah.
Well, I know, but I mean, like, as a way to start conversations, or do you find that people are maybe a little bit defensive when they read it? I felt like an interloper, like reading the book, I felt like an interloper because the book is very clearly, it's like a sales guide almost, but for how people of color can advance, you know, in the workplace. Yeah. And you're very clear about that. And so me reading it, it's not like I'm unwelcome or something, but I definitely felt like I'm learning about an experience that is not my own.
Wow. So there's, I'm going to try to make this succinct because we could talk for an hour about this. First of all, yes, you definitely should gift this to people. I write that in the book because it's not just, it's not really a sales tactic to say that, but I believe that there are gems and lessons in the book that can benefit all people. Especially if they learn how to sell, and through selling, I mean, advocate yourself in different scenarios. But two, you know, you saying that you feel like an interloper, I did not mince words with who I had in mind when I was writing this book, right? Because by no stretch of the imagination did Nathaniel Hawthorne write The Scarlet Letter for people who look like me. You know, my man wasn't thinking about me when he wrote that, right? And I read that in high school and I actually enjoyed it. But at the same time, everyone is welcome to come along for the ride. That's why in that author's note, this book for people who are watching, sort of metafiction where the book is written by Darren who becomes Buck, not so much me. And the author's note is from Buck and he says that, he pokes fun. He says, if you're not black, you know, consider yourself an honorary black person. Don't go don blackface in an afro, like some people might think they want to do, but picture yourself as black. And that's an invitation to put yourself in the shoes of someone else, knowing that you will never be them, but you can better understand their experience. So I'm so happy that you brought that up, Carrie, because the conversations that I'm having with many non-black and specifically white readers, my inbox is full from white women who are like 50 plus saying that the book really spoke to them and it gave them tools to be a better ally. So I'm just grateful for that as well.
Well, I'm glad that those old women found something in it.
Yeah. It's weird. Like all of them are like 50, 60, I'm 70
teasing.
Plus.
I'm totally teasing. I just don't want to be lumped in with a bunch of.
Oh, no, I'm not talking about you. I'm 29. Just saying, like, someone who wouldn't. I'm not talking about you at all. Come on.
No.
Yeah, I'd have to get a yellow card if I was talking about you.
Oh, no. We don't have yellow cards for guests. But now that you mention it, that's a pretty decent idea.
Why not? We need to be held accountable, too, not just Chris.
Never thought about that one, did we?
No, because the guest is always right.
That's right. Hey, Mateo, stick around if you can.
I will.
Stick around definitely. If you can. We got some questions for you. We're going to stick you backstage. Magical power. Boop. Buyblackbuck.com.
So backstage, the chat was popping. Dominique was saying that she's excited and loves the backstory of the book, and she's looking forward to reading it. So it's going to happen.
Well,
you know what? It's fantastic. Mm. I start every book that, like any guest that comes on the show that's written a book, I will start the book. I don't always finish the book. I'm finishing this book. I'm like an hour away from the end. And I'm so disappointed that I didn't finish it before. I've been listening to it every chance I get. So,
well, now we're shifting our gears into supporting women and women business runners of the world. We are going to try to optimize work. And, you know, it's important work. Dominique Townsend is going to come out. We're going to get some smarts, some wisdom, some knowledge. Look how smiley.
Yellow card for me. Why do I get a yellow card, Carol? I disagree. I vehemently disagree.
Dominique, I don't know. What's your judgment from the back? You get a vote.
I don't think. I think you get a pass. I don't think you get a yellow card.
How do I get a yellow card for saying I'm like whiter than sour cream and the book was clearly not meant for me, and yet I'm learning a lot from it. I feel like that's okay, Carol.
That's what's needed. You know, when people learn about different experiences, I think that's the answer to a lot of open problems and questions in the world. Oh, women over 50.
All right, Carol. Carol's such a special person. She's turning 60 this year, and she looks amazing.
And Carol looks good.
Amazing.
I'm loving this picture, Carol.
Hey, let's pretend I have a very small amount of time to talk to my new friend, Dominique. All right. Listen.
Y'all are not old. I say over 40, you're not old. You're still living life. Now you have so much wisdom. So I just say seasoned with nice and savviness.
I am just so glad that I get the opportunity to talk to you about helping out people who think. My opinion is that when people are trying to do their work at home and where people are trying to run the household in a whole new way, in a whole new universe that popped on us all in 2020, you're helping give people systems and all that. So We Optimize Work is about that, right? It's about getting people what they need to start running forward now.
Yes, my business pivoted due to COVID. We had a tornado in Nashville, and it was like day after day after day. I was getting just emails that said, "Oh, we need to cancel. It's not in person. Things are happening." And I just had to pivot my business. But before I could pivot my business, the majority of my focus was trying to figure out schooling needs for my children, because there were sudden stay-at-home orders. And I have 4 children, 11 and under, and the oldest 3 are in school. So we were literally on cell phones in class, one laptop that was working at the time. And the youngest, he's 2, and he operates to his own time zone. So it was just really chaotic. And so the last thing I could think about was me and what I needed to do for business and personal life. So that pivot inspired me to look at, well, how can I use my experience as I'm an engineer by trade and a Lean Six Sigma Master Black Belt. So I love processes and systems. I love improving things. And I treated myself like a project. And I was like, how can I help solve my problem? Because I'm about to lose it. My sanity is going, and I feel like I'm compromising my goals all because of just what's happening, and are just not having that support or feeling supported for what working moms need to thrive in these crazy situations. So I created a framework, and it started to work for me. I reached out to other working moms, and I found that they were facing more complex problems because they were reporting to bosses that were not listening to them, that did not have the empathy. They have empathy or the tools. So they either faced the boss that wanted them to clock in virtually at 8 o'clock and be at the screen while managing schooling needs. It was just something that was impossible. And it shows like 1 in 4 working moms, or 1 in 3 working moms, are being forced to downshift their careers or leave their jobs altogether. And so for me, I have a problem with that because there is a solution. Companies are adapting left and right based off of what's happening in society because of the pandemic. It gave them no other choice but to adapt. We need to shift that and treat working moms and what's happening with working moms. This is a critical talent pipeline. Performance of companies are going to decline. Retention, the cost of re-onboarding them because they have to downshift and leave their careers. Like, all of that is crazy. And it's happening. And what I wanted to look at is, how can I help support working moms? And that led to just having open, I would log on to Zoom and say, I am here all day. Whatever you need, if you need to vent, if you need a strategy, if you need just to ping some things off to help you better communicate with your boss or communicate with your manager, or just better manage those challenges that you're facing and trying to meet business needs and manage schooling, let me know. I will be on Zoom all day. And that led into me formalizing a program called Work Life Success. It teaches operations and strategies that can help support working moms and also companies that are looking to better support their working moms. So I started teaching webinars, and the webinars, and I'm just loving the share screen of the website. I just want to say thank you for that. But we just started to talk with companies and providing webinars to do good generalized teaching and say, here's some strategies. Here's what you need to do to support your working parent demographic. And then the other part was looking into, how do we have direct support for working moms? And that's where we offer membership programs. So our membership cohort provides that support for working moms. But that's what brings me that full circle of the pivot due to the pandemic that had to occur in my business, but also this pressing need that continually gets ignored and looked at as, oh, well, we'll work on that problem when society gets back to the new normal. And I think that this is something, if we ignore it, we're going to be, companies are essentially going to be the blockbuster of their industry. And I think that that's something that they need to pay attention to. Innovation for the next 2 years, is going to be how they support their employees, not in what products they innovate or what technology they innovate. How are you supporting your employees? Because if the lack of innovation in the workplace will spill into a lot of money, millions of dollars. In fact, it's $341 billion in lost productivity if there's not a solution provided for supporting working moms. But for me, if companies aren't supporting working moms, I'm going directly to them as well. Have a membership. Here's a membership program where we have on-demand support. We provide weekly group coaching and a framework that teaches them to treat their life like a project. What are you going through? What are you experiencing? And how do we help walk you through?
It's a pretty bad feeling because you're always, as a working mom with kids studying at home, ignoring work or ignoring them.
Yeah.
It's not a wonderful choice to make, and you have to make it all the time.
Yeah. And society, it's like society has this definition of what a mom is supposed to do. And that messes up the narrative for working moms who are looking to thrive in their career and thrive as a mom, you know, managing schooling needs, managing just being a parent. And I think we have it so siloed that it doesn't look like if a working mom tries to succeed, it's like there's not enough support out there that supports them to do that, because the narrative shows, oh, well, you could just leave your job and then when it gets better, you can come back, instead of like, oh, well, how, what does that make them feel like mentally and emotionally with having to be the ones that take on that extra demand? And why is it that it falls on the mom? What's happening? What's the narrative that we need to change? And the only way we can do that is by better supporting working moms, but getting working moms more comfortable in expressing their challenges without fear of being seen as someone that's a weak link or incapable. You know, we have to redefine what working moms, what that looks like. What does it mean to be who you are, especially now in these, I say COVID gave us no excuse to be who we want to be, how we want to be it. Like, you don't have to explain it anymore. If you say you made a shift in your life, no one's going to ask you why. And I think we need to operate like that, with giving ourselves permission to define what that looks like, but they have to be supported in order to do that. And that's what brings me here with my company, We Optimize Work, and through our membership program, Work-Life Success, that supports working moms and mom CEOs. I work with mom CEOs one-to-one, but definitely with working moms and membership programs, that's the key thing.
Carrie, I don't understand your question, so I'm going to pretend like you can tell me again, because I got nothing.
So one of the things that you had touched on, Dominique, was that there's real return on investment for businesses that apply this framework you're talking about that support working mothers, because they are going to pay, it's going to pay dividends in terms of retention, in terms of not having to onboard new people, in terms of lost productivity when these moms have to leave the workforce for a while to handle homeschooling and stuff like that. So when you talk with executives at companies, and I've reported to plenty of people who don't have kids at home and kind of don't get what that's like. So how do you sell them on the value of supporting working moms? And how do you kind of diffuse the resentment some people feel when they don't have kids and they think other people are like getting away with something because they have to stay home with a sick kid?
Yeah. Yeah. And I made the decision to only work with companies who actively want to work with working moms. And what that means is they're starting conversations and they know that there's a need. They're just trying to figure out how. Companies are often confused. They know that that there's a problem are concerned with their working moms, but how do they meet that problem? That's where companies fall at, because there's so many different types of experiences of meeting working moms where there are. You're a Black working mom, you experience challenges at a different level than a white working mom. And it's statistically shown. And it's because of just different environmental factors, different support factors, but they have to leave their jobs at a higher rate. So the challenges and support they need might look different. Now, all working moms need support, but there's different levels of things that starts to make it more complex in how they meet it. So what I do is just look and see, where are they at? What are you currently doing? Are you in the beginning of starting support for working moms? And if they are, I start with webinars, and we offer a webinar that talks about how to manage schooling needs, how to take care of others, and find time for yourself without guilt. And so we provide strategies that help them align it. The unique thing is, I don't tell people how to parent. I don't tell them this is what you should do. I give them a framework so they can have the framework to revisit and customize it that works according to them and their capacity. What is their limit? So getting people to be comfortable to understand we all have different capacities. We all have different limits. How do you meet that? And the next stage is when corporations have employees that are interested in more support. And this includes working dads. This includes caregivers as well. If they have some longer term support that they need, that's when we offer our membership. And they have 12 months. We're launching our membership program on February 15th, which is exciting. And that is working moms and caregivers. They can purchase a membership they can purchase it directly. And we're also working with companies to see if they can support, like we have 20 or 30 working moms who want ongoing support. They can enroll them into our membership program and we provide them the support they need for ongoing and give them the group coaching. But the ROI is just all about the onboarding. The average cost to hire and retrain is, you're looking at $40,000 minimum to re-onboard someone, have the same level of expertise, bring them back if they come back. And that is our programs, our membership programs per working mom is $950, but we have a special going on now, but it's $950 per working mom. So just that immediate, you can see that difference there with retaining a working mom and the cost, and then also employee morale, and mental support, mental health support, that's increased as well. I think about 4 times in the cost that companies are paying for EAP support. So we are providing that with that all-in-one solution that helps meet working moms where they are, because that's where the gap is. They see that there is support needed, but they don't know how to address where they are. If you're a working mom that has no support, what does that look like? It looks different than someone that has at least a little bit of support. What about a mom who feels lost at work and she has a boss that is a very sucky boss? Like, how does she communicate her challenges? She needs a different set of tools to help her guide the best way to go about being successful and redefining what that looks like for her, but also not making her feel like she's forced. I think it's, if you choose to leave your job or you choose to downshift, I feel that if that's the best thing for you, do it. I highly recommend you do that. But I don't believe that working moms should feel forced to leave their jobs or forced to downshift because of the lack of solutions and the lack of support. And that is the thing that I look at and how to help companies. I can be that bridge between the working moms and corporations, be that bridge and also be a direct solution for working moms as well.
You know, questions of diversity and inclusion aside, I think Black Buck is an excellent sales guide. So anybody who's interested in pitching their business, seriously, read it.
Drag it in. You can bring that to teach people how to optimize work. Dominique, I didn't, you have so much to say. There's so much to cover and we have so little time, but I want to say a couple things. One thing is that Six Sigma is known for not exactly being all that caring of someone's family life. The process is a process, but the man behind the process and the whole system behind the process and where it kind of had its babies was certainly, you know, forget about your humanity. I need your engine. And you're teaching people that there's got to be a different way. Like you can't expect me at 8 a.m. right now. Right? 8 a.m. is not going to work because all my kids have to be at their school at 8 a.m. And if 5 people need to be expected somewhere at the same time, it's not just going to work that way. Mm-hmm. That's my comment because I don't have time to make it a question. And then I have one other thing I want to show, which was as I was going through your site and you had that cohort that people can come and join. That's a real primary product that, you know, it's come and be part of this thing. I love that this information, I'm not patting your head. I'm stealing this idea from my business is what I want. I need you to know this. I saw that. I said, fudge. You get this PDF that says information packet for work-life success, da-da-da. You go along. What's included? Here's what's going to happen. I'm Dominique. Here's this stuff. I was like, son of a biscuit. This is so much better than what I do. Like, this packet was like, I'm stealing this idea. So I just need you to know that. Again,
take away.
You know, great. What do they say? Good authors copy, great authors steal. And I'm Irish. All right. I'm putting you backstage just because I have
like
to.
Like Irish
time.
People steal more or something?
Yeah.
That's what the implication is.
It's a yellow card. You're stereotyping.
Right? I'm
your
Irish
own,
too.
You're stereotyping your own.
That's why I said it.
Boom shakalaka. Yellow card, Brogan. And Brogan is going down like a bag of hammers tonight.
Dominique Townsend, stick around. We got some more for you, but I'm pushing you backstage, you wonderful lady.
Bye.
Stick around. Boop.
Mateo backstage had said that the work that Dominique is doing is so cool and timely.
Super important.
Yep. And everybody in the comments agrees.
All right. Now listen, we saved Gabe, who couldn't make it one day, and we brought him back because we love bass players. And we love music, so I'm really excited about this. And I've been watching Rick Beato a lot. I don't know if you know that name, but he's this music industry guy that like takes some of the coolest songs from exactly.
How come you get to like wax poetic, and then if I talk about Mateo's book for like 35 seconds, you say
because you've been talking
you're
about
using
it for
time
a while. But no, I'm doing an intro.
Oh,
so you know, watching Rick Beato, you get to watch and learn a lot about these songs that I grew up loving. Like, you know, you watch like Smells Like Teen Spirit by Nirvana, but he breaks it down little bit by bit. He breaks down Chop Suey by System of a Down. He breaks down even Running with the Devil. He made me appreciate Michael Anthony. So now I'm going to bring in Gabe, the bass player, Gabe Anderson, and I'm going to ask him a question. Okay. Is Michael Anthony underrated, overrated, or silly? Right answers only.
A little silly.
That man just hammered. The only thing that they could say nice about him is he was in the pocket. That's all they could say.
Yeah. Well, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me on.
So I found you because I posted on Twitter saying, I want to learn new things. Who do I need to learn from? And somebody was like, you need to look up Gabe the bass player. So I did. And I can't play regular guitar, never mind bass. I'm like working on it very slowly.
Yeah, so yeah, yeah.
When did you first start playing?
I started playing bass when I was 13. Saved up my money, went to the local music shop. I got an Ibanez Silver Cadet, which is still at my parents' house. I don't have it with me here. But yeah, I got that and a little tiny amp about this big. And that was it. I had a friend who had a guitar and he came over and I'll never forget. We argued about how the proper tuning was supposed to be on the bass. I mean, we were 12 or whatever it was. And we had to call the music store back to get the right tuning. And once we had that, we like played our first four chords all together. And that was a pretty great feeling. Just guitar with the bass all together. That was great. That had me hooked right there.
What were the early songs? What was the, we've got to get this one figured out, man. What was that?
Let's see. For me at that time, what was I doing? It was a lot of Beatles stuff early on. Getting the bass coincided with me stealing my friend Emily Goff's Past Masters Volume 1 and 2, the black and the white records that came out with like a bunch of the B-sides and singles that had sort of come out not on regular records. And so I'd taken those from her during shop class, stole them out of her bag, and then shortly after that got the bass. Friend comes over with the guitar. So we were doing like Hey Jude and we were doing Please Please Me and Love Me Do and all those. It's the best. It's a great feeling.
So people who don't play music don't know, but the Beatles have some of the hardest music in the world to play in some ways. Bass isn't the worst. I mean, it's manageable, but the guitar stuff, the choices of chords and all that, your guitar guy must have hated you for that.
Yeah, it's funny how famous the Beatles music was and how intricate some of the changes were. You know, a lot of the times these days, so I send out an email every Sunday night to songwriters and publishers, mostly here in Nashville, but some in New York and LA too. And in that email, I sort of break down the top songs of the week with like chord progressions and tempo and some of that. And the progressions are really pretty simple, you know, 1-4-5 kind of stuff. If you're a musician, you know what that means. But the Beatles were doing really crazy stuff, even early on with seventh chords and little mods and key changes. And it's really cool to me that their music was so popular on a broad, obviously global level. And they were getting away with some pretty cool music stuff.
You had your own band, right? The Kicks. So how, and you started a licensing company, if I'm not mistaken.
So you've been
like around the business. Are you happy with where you landed? Are you not done landing yet? Are you going to go back, do another band thing? Like, what's your plan?
Yeah, I'm still landing. So I did the band called The Kicks for pretty much all through my 20s. When I got out of college, we hopped in the van and really stayed there for years and years. And that was wonderful. But yeah, so I started a music licensing company last year. I set out to do the business side, so like pitching songs to supervisors and getting stuff placed. But then I worked on a project on the creative side, and we did, I don't recommend this, but it was cool to do it once. We wrote and recorded 50 songs in about 4 months, for a not my licensing company, but a different licensing company. Yeah, there I am on the bass. It's been a long time since I've watched this video.
Well, it's pretty colorful in black and white. It's got a real nice vibe to it. And should I be daring enough to turn up the music, it would be pretty rocking.
You'd get copyright stricken.
We get struck all the time, Gabe. We don't even touch it if we can help it. We have the person making the song with us on the show. We get wrecked.
So. Love it. Yeah, this is super fun. The drums were the only our instruments weren't plugged in or anything, but the drums were live. And in that big infinity white room that you're seeing, it was so loud. Wow. It was so loud in there. And so we have earplugs and you can't see them in the cut, but those cymbals in that huge room were so loud. And we probably did like 20 takes of the song. So it was a lot. It's so fun to watch. I haven't watched this in a long time.
Did he have to bust out when the levee breaks at any point just because of the acoustics?
At every point, at every break. Yeah. Anytime there was a stop,
It's so fun and easy to trash modern music. Like it's endless. We don't have to even work that hard at it. But what do you wish would come back? What do you wish would go away?
I just watched the one of the Laurel Canyon documentaries. When I was sick 3 weeks ago. On the couch, I watched one of the Laurel Canyon documentaries and just going through those, from 64 or so when the Beatles came and then to 67, 68. And something that was so evident in all those bands, the Beatles, the Birds, the Stones, Mamas and the Papas, all of it, was just the consistency that they wrote, that they were writing. It wasn't we'll write a record once a year and then take a break from writing. There was this culture of creation that does exist here in Nashville, but especially with bands, I don't see that as much as I'm meeting with and talking with bands. Just the culture of like we're writers and this is what we do every day. We're picking up a guitar, or getting on the computer, and being creative and writing music. And that was something, watching that documentary, the Laurel Canyon one, it's so romantic because it's the 60s and we get to color it however we want to. But so it's pretty romantic, but I would love to see that come back.
Just and what was the other everybody part of the vaccinated.
That first, but yeah.
Should prioritize musicians in Nashville if every state gets to prioritize who gets vaccinated first.
Exactly.
I'd be screwed, by the way. I can't play
well. You've got the guitar back there. So.
I have two. I'm like plucking them out. My guitar instructor like writes out the tabs for me and stuff and the chords. Yeah. And that's how I play it. Like I don't know music theory at all.
Yeah, it's all right.
I'm getting through 9 to 5 right now.
There we go. There we go. Appropriate. Yeah.
Right? I thought so.
Yeah.
Chris, there was a second part of your question. What do you want to
What do you wish could come back? What do you throw out? What's got to go? My answer is a mumble rap, but
What's got to go? I would say something that I could do without is I'm ready for us to move on from the snap snare, like the snap on the twos and the fours with the snare underneath. I'm ready for that to find its way out.
So no more beard music, no more Mumford and Sons and all those like anthem-y sounding ones. Is it?
Well, like it's like that verse snap. So like you get a bit of the intro, and it happens a lot in country music right now too, where like the twos and the fours in the verse are the snaps with maybe a little bit of snare underneath. And that's, I think we'll look back 20 years from now and be like, oh yeah, that was the 5 years where everybody did the snaps and now we don't do that anymore. So I'm ready.
No, that's over. Like boy bands are over.
It's a phase. It's fun, but I'm tired of it.
You outgrew it.
Well, you do have one request from backstage that you should sing and walk us through an example.
That's a good suggestion.
An example of what? I have you in full screen here. So
that's all good. That's all good. Full screen's the right way to go. You shouldn't be distracted.
Of what you want to get rid of, I think. So she wants an example of the thing you want to get rid of.
Show us that snap. Give us a good snap hum along. There we go.
That right there in the verse. Yeah.
This is full circle to my Rick Beato comment. Watching him talk about running with the devil, he was talking about the fact that it's all recorded more or less live. And when David Lee Roth is singing at the very beginning, he's snapping and you can hear it in the background. Like it's not.
Oh, wow.
You can hear Eddie's guitar sometimes or Mike's bass sometimes rattling Alex's drum kit, that kind of a thing. Wow. Like, that doesn't exist anymore. There's no, there's no tone in a room or anything musically anymore.
Yeah, and I do love that stuff because I grew up listening to all that old music where you could hear the hum of the amplifier. Well, you know, if the guitar player wasn't playing, you could still hear the rattle and the hum of everything. But while there isn't that, a lot of those like weird extra noises that just sort of pop up in music. I don't know if it's coming. I haven't seen any signs to say that is coming back, you know, and I think in a way I love those things, so I miss them. But at the same time too, when I'm in the room making music or anybody is, it's still romantic. It's still hard. It's still the elusive mystery and all that. We just don't get some of the humanity in the track, but it's still there.
It's there. All right. I'm grabbing Mateo. I'm grabbing Dominique. You know, it's been so long. I forget. Which order we had everybody. I think Mateo was there. Dominique was not there. Like this.
You do that like anybody watching would know where everybody was. Like,
nobody knows because they didn't see backstage.
Right there.
So, Gabe, thank you so much for that. And I just wanted to bring everybody on because it's interesting the thread, right? We try to look for alchemy between the guests, but we intentionally don't try to marry guests together. We don't go, well, this goes nice with this person. It doesn't work that way. But it does this time, right? So we've got music and the importance of music. We've got the importance of staying creative. That was one of the first big things that Gabe said, which is what Mateo's been going through. You're all vibing off each other. How important it is to get this work off the ground to make it so that people's home lives can better integrate back to their regular life. Seems like it all flows. What are you all feeling when you hear that? Let's start with Mateo. You've been gone the longest.
Gone but not forgotten. I couldn't agree more. What feels like the unifying thread between all of us, maybe all of us on stage, this audio virtual stage right now, is freedom, right? Gabe is so free. He could have answered. I thought he was going to maybe answer mumble rap like you, Chris, but he answered in a way that I was like, this man is like a musical genius. Like he understands it so thoroughly that he's not going to give an answer that I thought. And Dominique is freeing other people in ways that she's found to free herself. So I'm honored to be here with everyone.
I've heard that if you free your mind, the rest will follow.
I've seen the song.
Don't encourage him. He would do that the whole show. It would be nothing but song lyrics. Half the people won't get them. Right. And they'll just answer him like it's a serious question.
That's the worst part is when the answer is if I was being completely.
Because I don't know, like, should I tell them? And then it's too, I let it go too long. And now I can't tell them because it'd be weird.
Can't bring it back to the subject because Pep's on the set. It's a terrible thing. Dominique, in sort of being in this crowd, you get a whole bunch of different perspectives. What does it mean to you to see this going on? What do you need to bring forward? What's the rest of your day going to be like today?
The rest of my day is going to be like showing up like I did this morning. And I appreciate you providing this opportunity, you and Carrie providing this opportunity for people like us and that are looking to pave the way on things that we love to do and finding ways to make an impact through the things we love to do, like Mateo said, with the freedom. That's actually my theme for the year. Freedom to be me, freedom to be authentic. So today I'm going to continue to show up. I'm going to host the IG live and I'm going to talk about my membership, you know, and not like sit down and go, well, I'll just text about it. I'm like, no, I'm just going to do a live, talk about things. But I feel inspired to show up even more.
You know what? Thank you. We love doing this so much. We've talked about this. It's like it's our favorite thing we've ever done. Personally, it got me through the pandemic, learning from smart people every single day.
We like to make a joke, too, is that, you know, guys like this one are the rarity on our show. It's a lot of women, a lot of people of color. We figured that out at the beginning. One of the things we said is, man, everybody already gets a stage. Who can we find that we don't know that doesn't have a stage? You know, who's got to get out there? And you know, every now and again, some friend of mine will say, hey, can I get on my show? And I'll be like, sure, if you come out or something.
Like, I'm flexible. Like, if you like did some stuff in college,
this is crazy. You know.
That'd be enough.
It was that one time we drank a lot. But that's it. I mean, you know, we just really want it. We want to put the stage where it is, and our joke is that it's Black History Month, and that's the joke, because you know, it should be Black History Life. You know, we already had the quiet time, so we're all good with that. But Gabe, bringing you in case you're like, what the hell? Like, why, how did this work? It does work, right? Like, it works because we need creators and music makers, and we need the people with big, right brains, and we need the people who can turn it into something. And so, like you said, you're doing a licensing business. That's the first thing Sir Mix-a-Lot said. Mix-a-Lot said when we had him on the show, name drop, he made so much money on My Posse's on Broadway. He made so much money. He went out and he bought that Lamborghini he'd always wanted, because, you know, when you don't have it, you buy it when you're young. And he lost all his money and got in trouble with the federal government and all that sort of thing. And then he came back with licensing. And he said one day, just talk, he name dropped me. He said, you know, the first time I hung out with Chuck D, Chuck D said to me that the thing I admire you the most is not your raps. It's about your licensing and what you taught me about how to own my business. So that's why you're here, Gabe. You're here because you're every bite into this storyline is all the rest of the people here. So,
yeah, thanks for saying that. Yeah, this is a great place to be. It's fun to see. I don't know. It sounds like everybody here has broken out of their loop, has showed up in a place where maybe they didn't wait for permission to show up there. And I think it's one of the great things about where technology has gone. And even just to, I mean, I would never know any of the four of you if not for something like this and technology like this. But really, the things that we're doing as individuals come from an attitude of, I see sort of the loop that I'm on, the dance that I do day to day, and having the tenacity and consistency, really, of breaking out of that loop, even if it's just a little bit, and then a little bit, and then a little bit. So it's good to be in the company of all of yours.
Well, someone more famous than I said, I don't need permission. I make my own decisions. And on that note.
Oh, and here's our person of the day. Kaboom!
So our person of the day, there's a lot to choose from. Oh, you know who I'm going to give it to? Coach Scott Woodard. That's his
Coach Woodard. We should give him a jacket or something.
Five timers club. So
yeah, he doesn't even want to be in contention anymore because the attention is embarrassing now.
So we made him five times. All right,
he's just so smart.
He does a lot of good comments. A lot of Dave Davies. A lot of good conversation going on. Very excited about.
I learn as much from the people who show up for us and talk with us in the comments as I ever do from the guests. It's amazing.
You know you're in the right room when the people that are around you are just as able to come up on the stage and be the guest. So it's a good time.
Think about it. My job is to show up and not know anything and learn from everybody else. So it's great.
I take that to heart every day. All right. Listen, we have one last question before we kick you back out to the curb. What goes in your backpack? Now, this backpack question is something we've asked every single guest. The idea is it's crazy out there. Everything's crazy. There's shifting sands beneath your feet. We cannot have a big foundation. You can only carry just so much.
Coach Woodard, we're looking... so mad.
That's
so
great.
So mad.
I got to remember to pick up no.com again. It's no with like nine O's in it. And it's perfect for those moments. Backpack question. Oh, so what goes in your backpack? It could be something physical. It could be something metaphorical. Now, you can only put one thing in unless it has to be paired, like, you know, pen and pencil. But you could do something like one of my favorite guests. My favorite physical answer is an avocado. Carrie, what's your favorite physical?
Extra set of teeth.
DJ Cummerbund.
DJ Cummerbund.
Mashup artist said an extra set of teeth. You never know.
Wow.
Something metaphorical. Carrie, what's a good metaphorical one?
Fearlessness and vulnerability. That was comedian Dave Landau.
Comedian Dave Landau. I don't ever remember who said which ones, but we got a lot of people that say things like, you know, creativity, courage, grit, gumption. Those are all our kind of things. So I'm going to start, you know, ladies first. I'll do Dominique. Dominique, what's the thing that goes in your backpack?
Intention.
I like it. I don't have any words. You just said it. Intention.
That's what you get. That's all you get.
Attention. Mateo Escaripur, what goes in your backpack?
The ability to take risks.
Tricky as a creative. You have to get pretty naked out there and as a salesperson.
Yep.
Whew. It's tight today. This is tight. Why, Carrie, why can't they answer like this all the time?
I don't know.
Gabe Anderson, we need to know what's in your backpack.
Something that's been on my mind a lot is not letting my quest for understanding completely get in the way of caring.
Wow.
Sensitivity. That's deep. We have some really deep answers.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not an extra set of teeth, but like, it's good. You
know? And $100. I'd love to have $100 in my backpack.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Never know when you're going to need $100.
You know, I mean, not in a single bill, because nothing says rich a-hole looking for trouble like $100 bill.
So I'd like 20s. two 50s. I really like the $50 bill. I think that's the most underrated bill.
I'm looking forward to the 20s.
Anyway. My sister used to give me a $2 bill for Christmas every year, and my mom would be like, let me hold that for you. And she spent it every fucking year. And then I would like realize it and go, Mom, where's all my $2 bills? She'd give me $2. Like, that's the same thing.
Close enough. So, you know, the only thing I have similar to that is every holiday or birthday, my grandmother would buy scratch tickets for the person and put them in a card. And she'd buy $10 worth of scratch tickets. And every single time she'd go and rip one off and say, let's you and me scratch that. And every now and again, we'd get like $500.
Wow.
They'd get 9 tickets with nothing on them. A whole bunch of times we got the gift, even though it was for somebody else. And that's, you know, another thing about my grandmother. She would say,